Most Americans know the story of the Battle of the Alamo as the iconic stand led by Davy Crockett, Jim Bowie, and William Barrett Travis and other rebels who gallantly fought for independence from Mexico, losing the battle but setting Texas up to win the war. It is an origin story that has become the beating heart of Texas exceptionalism. The legend is also an American touchstone, a symbol of national resolve. But our next guest, Chris Tomlinson, says that version of events owes more to fantasy than reality. Chris Tomlinson is one of three authors of the new book, Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. He writes the book along with Jason Stanford and Brian Burrow, and it's a pleasure to welcome Chris Tomlinson, a columnist for the Houston Chronicle and the San Antonio Express News, to the program this morning. Chris, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Really good to have you. So how did the three of you come to tackle this volume?
Well, you know, we're three friends, writer friends, who would have breakfast and eat Huevos Rancheros every Saturday morning and talk about our work. And I was writing for the San Antonio Express News about its brand, the city's brand. Should it be the Alamo? And what does the Alamo represent? And I was getting a lot of hate mail, and my co-authors didn't know that, you know, most of what we think we know about the Alamo is untrue. And we started talking, and Brian slapped his hand on the table and said, this should be a book. And so that was 2 years ago, and now it's out.
So let us talk about, why do you get hate mail? So what is it that you are saying that elicits that type of response?
Well, the problem is that almost every element of this story is slightly, if not completely, inaccurate. For example, you know, the people who took up arms, the Anglos who illegally crossed the border into Mexico, into what is now Texas, they were angry with the Mexican government, not because they were being oppressed. They were angry because the Mexican government wanted to take their slaves away. They wanted to abolish slavery in Texas because Texas was the only place in Mexico that allowed any form of servitude. You know, the heroes of the Alamo were not that very heroic. They had tried to surrender the night before the Mexican attack. When the battle started, a third of them just cut and run and were chased down by Mexican cavalry. And then there's finally the big lie, and this comes from Sam Houston, of all people. Houston had wanted to abandon the Alamo. He wanted Jim Bowie to blow it up and bring all the troops to join the army in Gonzales, and they got caught flat-footed when the Mexican army showed up earlier than expected. And so they were trapped, and it was a battle they didn't want to fight. They did not slow the advance of the Mexican army. And so they really pretty much died for nothing. And that's why Houston, in desperate for a propaganda win after losing this big battle, created the myth that somehow these people valiantly fought to the death so that Texas could be saved.
So before we get into some specifics, let us just talk about, I mean, and you just touched on this, but so why do these misperceptions remain today of how effective that campaign was to twist it to the way you just described?
Well, you know, when the battle took place, there was really no such thing as a professional historian. You know, leaders wrote memoirs. They wrote, you know, biographers told the stories of famous people. But the technical, detailed, methodical research into what is true and what's not, that didn't emerge until the late 1800s, certainly not in Texas before that. And when the first historians started coming to Texas and started the universities, they were ordered to perpetuate the myths. They were said, this is the story we want to tell, and you're going, all your research is going to support it. It wasn't really until the 1960s that historians in Texas began to dig deep, that they went to Mexico City and pulled out the Mexican army's reports about what really happened and including those accounts into the larger story. But unfortunately, you know, in Texas, it is still the law that school teachers have to say the defenders were heroic. and they have to perpetuate the myth. They don't have a choice.
So when you visit the Alamo today, and I haven't been there in, say, a decade, but when you go to visit the Alamo today, how is the story presented?
Well, it's obviously going to stick very closely to the myths. A heritage group called the Daughters of the Republic of Texas, they were responsible for the grounds and the presentation of the story for almost 100 years. And it was only like 4 years ago that the state took over the Alamo from them. So it's still the story of what we call the Holy Trinity of Travis, Crockett, and Bowie. And they have a brass strip in front of the chapel where supposedly Travis drew the line in the sand. Even though that story of the line in the sand was invented 38 years after the battle and has no basis in fact.
Part of the problem, too, in getting the facts out is that the Alamo is such big business for Texas, right? I mean, the myth, for one, I mean, there's probably a more polite way of putting this, but the myth works, right? It sells tickets.
Oh, the idea of valiant people sacrificing their lives so others may live, that's a compelling human story. It's one that exists in almost every culture, in almost every nation's origin story. And you're right, it works. It makes people proud. It makes people feel special. And San Antonio itself has branded itself as the Alamo City. It's been a huge part of what brings tourists to the city. But what's so shocking is that the Alamo experience is really pretty awful. You know, most of the plaza is covered with schlocky stores and tourist right. traps. The chapel itself is very small. There's no real museum. And the Daughters gift shop is really probably the place where people spend most of their time.
Yeah, I have to say, as a tourist, was disappointed. I don't know what I was expecting, but that wasn't it. And ultimately, you just find yourself not spending much time there. So plans are underway, a $450 million plan to renovate Alamo Plaza. And you write about this in the book. I mean, on its face, you would think this is a great thing, although to the museum aspect, a lot of what they're putting in there is inaccurate and some of it is just fake.
You know, for 50 years, people have wanted to improve the Alamo experience, but no one had the money. No, the state legislature wasn't going to pony up any dollars. But then there's this rock musician, you know, Phil Collins from Genesis and big star of the 80s. He became obsessed with the Alamo when he was a child. And when he got some money, he started buying every artifact, even remotely connected to the Alamo. So he has the largest collection of Alamo artifacts today. And when he offered to give it to the state of Texas, his one condition was that we build a $300 million museum to house it. We started digging into this story because it's obviously a great one. You've got celebrities and artifacts and the Alamo. And then the experts started telling us, oh, wait a minute, you know, that knife that supposedly belonged to Jim Bowie, we don't think that's legitimate. Or that shot pouch that was supposedly Davy Crockett's, you need to check on that because we don't think that was actually Davy's. And so our investigation showed that the authentication on these items is very shaky. In some cases, it relies on psychics. That was our big surprise. And we're hoping that the state kind of investigates further before they spend $300 million of taxpayer money.
Wow. So when you the overall story, just having Phil Collins involved, is odd, right? I mean, that's weird.
You know, Disney did a great job with that TV series. He captured the zeitgeist of the Cold War. He turned Davy Crockett from a buffoon into this stoic mid-century American male standing up against liberty. Then you have John Wayne, who also made his movie, The Alamo, into a fable about fighting communism. And his movie had nothing to do with the truth. It's great storytelling. It's just not good history telling.
So how does that all go down in the state of Texas? And how do you change those perceptions that have been ingrained in the people for generations and centuries?
Well, obviously, there's an older generation of Anglo-Texan who grew up on Disney and John Wayne, and that demographic right now is very angry with us. The trolls are out on social media, and it's and that's a little ugly. I think there's also, though, the Tejanos, the Hispanics, the Chicanos, the Mexican-Americans who have grown up in Texas being told that somehow they are second-class citizens because of their ancestry, because of the color of their skin. And they're just pleased as punch that we're finally telling their true story, the one that they had grown up hearing from family members. And that we, in several chapters of the book, we talk about their perceptions and their experiences with the Alamo. And lastly, I would say there is a younger generation, and we saw this when the George Floyd protests took place in front of the Alamo and people started shouting down with white supremacy, people who saw the Alamo as a neo-Confederate monument, who are demanding that a truer story be told. So, yes, there is a faction of Texans who will never forgive me, but I'd say the majority are 100% behind us.
The name of the book is Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. The book is written by our guest, Chris Tomlinson, along with his colleagues Jason Stanford and Brian Burrow. It is published by Penguin Press. Chris, I thank you very much for joining us this morning. Great pleasure to have you on the program.
Great. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.